Hi everyone, I'm Gary Knoll. Always nice to be able to share positive and insightful information each day here. Today we're going to talk about how olives, a compound in them, alleviates gestational diabetes by activating the AMPK signaling from the Licheng People's Hospital in China, which means that gestational diabetes mellitus has a high incident rate among pregnant women. The objective of the study was to assess the effect of a plant-derived nutrient in attenuating inflammation, meaning keeping it down, and oxidative stress helping diminish it. And it worked. So, for people with gestational diabetes, olives, olive oil, both can help. We have a lot more, including how a study finds eating chili peppers could extend your life. This is from the American Heart Association. Very important study, because you can actually get a chili benefit, meaning the heat value without actually eating the pepper. If you don't like something that's hot, you could take a tablet. I'll tell you about that study and how long it can extend the life in just a few moments. Also today, an original investigative report on looking at COVID from a different perspective. And this is an article, it's posted on PRN.fm, it's called A More Honest Perspective of the COVID Pandemic 19. So this will give you an understanding of what we're being told that's accurate, inaccurate, partially accurate, and completely inaccurate. Richard Gale and myself have worked the last month on collecting the data for this. And by the way, I keep seeing people appearing in the media talking about, well, you've got to wait, don't take anything, just wash your hands, wear a face mask, social distance. If you should get sick while you're at home, until you have to go to the hospital, just take Tylenol. No mention of how we can naturally build up our immune system. No mention of how high dose vitamin D, let's say 30, 40,000 units, can make a difference. No, nothing. All of which is in the peer-reviewed scientific literature to support it. But what about the medications that you could take, including a combination, zithromycin, zinc, and hydroxychloroquine? They say there's no studies, no peer review studies. As of this hour, we have posted on PRN.fm a list of those studies. They say do not exist. In fact, we've made it really easy. The ones that show no statistical difference or a negative are in red. All the ones showing positive are in green. Well, you start scrolling down the list, and you start saying green, 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 one red. How many do we have? Mind you, we're talking about for mainstream peer review published on PubMed, 145 studies. How many all told? 210 studies. Overall, if you were to say how many people in these studies benefited, 100% of the studies report positive effects. 65% improvement from a meta-analysis. So those who say that it doesn't work or no studies exist, they're either extremely misinformed, innocently misinformed, they just don't know, or they don't care to do their homework, or there's some other motive. But what if you get sick? What if you're at home, you have the symptoms, you delay, and then you end up having to go to hospital? 78% of the studies report positive effects, positive, even when you're in hospital. 28% of these show a early treatment high efficacy, even in hospital. So that's extremely important, because before there was zero help. You had to go on ventilators, and that was the worst thing that could have happened in most cases. All these were being done all the while hydroxychloroquine was working. So now you have the absolute proof in your hand. For those who say, well, surely you know, the New York Times, CNN, if this was true, they would report it. Oh, you mean report weapons of mass destruction, honestly? No, it was the New York Times that led that lie. Look at the consequences. Anyone held accountable for all the deaths, millions of displacements? No. Billions and billions of dollars, trillions of dollars spent? No. So I'm telling you that I'm giving you scholarly, peer-reviewed, PubMed journals, the finest journals in the world. They're all up on PRN.fm. Go to PRN.fm on my notes for my program on the right-hand side. You'll see the date, the peer-reviewed journal, so you see which journal it comes from, like The Lancet and International Journal of Virology, PLOS One, Archives of Internal Medicine. I'm just reading down. So now you have the absolute proof. So for those who believe that, well, there is no proof, then you're living in some kind of denialism because we're sharing it with you. So more on this when I share the article, A More Honest Perspective of the COVID-19 Pandemic. It is non-political. It is just facts. That'll be in about 10 minutes. Also today, I want you to hear both a heart-rending and a very concerning statement. I do not believe in violence as a solution. I believe in honest, open dialogue. But we have an awful lot of Americans who are about to enter that area that I told you will come. For 10 years, people say, Gary, you keep saying we're not in enough pain. We're not in enough pain. That's why we're not going to the streets. That's why we're voting for the wrong people. That's why, well, some people, because of their pain and disenfranchisement and being neglected, they voted. They voted for Barack Obama because of that. They voted for Donald Trump, hoping that the promises made would see some salvation for their dilemma. It led to more problems. Now there's another step. Listen carefully what I'm about to say so you hear it in its proper context. It is my belief, and that is subjective. I could be wrong, and I hope I am, that more than one-third of the entire American population, you're talking about over approximately more or less 115 million Americans, that includes men, women, and children, are in such pain because of them being grossly depressed, out of work, overworked, underpaid, can't keep up with their debt, small businesses going bankrupt at an alarming rate, relationships deteriorating, people giving up, becoming apathetic, suicidally, prescription drug use skyrocketing, the government completely indifferent to all this, that they're going to lose it. When they lose it, that silent majority will go ballistic. I don't want to see that. That would be destructive. But a lot of people that I speak to in Heartland America, they've had it. They've had it with the media and its bias. They've had it with Beverly D'Angelo's, you know, racist book, extremely racist book, one of the most dangerous books since Mein Kampf, Hitler's book, of categorizing an entire ethnic group as racist from birth with no chance for redemption. How insane, irresponsible, despicable, hate-filled screed that is, and yet that's being embraced, and now it has the potential to be made into law based upon who's in power now at all levels. What do you think that's going to do to a person when you start compounding one problem on another, on another, on another? You'll hear from one of those people today. But also, you're going to hear from Dr. Michael Yeadon, Y-E-A-D-O-N. He is, for decades, for 37 years, he has sat at the table of the most prestigious group of scientists in the world, in virology, in molecular biology, in vaccinology, in immunology. He was the chief scientist for Pfizer, and he's speaking out. And he's going against all that that science is supposed to be about. He's telling you the truth. It is so rare to have someone tell us the truth. But he is. And I want you to hear him. Now, you can agree or disagree with him, but he's been banned from all media. No one's allowing him to have a voice. So why wouldn't they allow one of their own, one of the people that's published hundreds of articles in peer-reviewed journals, who has been a leading scientist in the whole world, why would they want him to be silenced, censored? You'll hear in his own words. That's our show. We have a lot to share. Now we go to the latest on health and healing. If you like eating chili peppers, and it turns out you might be doing more than just pleasing your taste buds, a recent study carried out by the American Heart Association took earlier research from multiple countries on chili peppers and analyzed it. The determination by the researchers was that people who regularly ate chili peppers, quote, were associated with a 25% reduction in death from any cause. Let me repeat that. You were 25% less likely to die from any cause if you ate chili peppers. The paper, released last month, further found that frequent chili pepper consumption may reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease by 26% and cause 23% fewer cancer deaths compared to people who never or only rarely consume chili pepper. End quote. That's very important. How many studies did they examine? 4,000, with more than 570,000 participants. And it was in the United States, Italy, China, and Iran. And so, a lot less cancer, less heart disease death. We're talking about death, unless all cause of death. And this was published in their peer review journal. So, let's just say that you don't like the taste of hot pepper. Take a capsule. Take what is called a high heat unit capsule. From the University of British Columbia comes a study published in Cerebral Cortex, and it deals with the idea of stress. And some people believe that, well, they need that stress, it helps them. Not true. The notion, according to the British Columbia University study, that a bit of stress makes people perform better has been, well, it's been indoctrinated into us. But research by the neuroscientist, Dr. Adele Diamond, suggests it might not be so good for us after all. They found that even mild stress may harm most people's executive functions. Now, what do I mean? Mental skills like self-control, focused attention, working memory, and problem solving. Those are called mental executive functions. And so we end up not doing better, actually doing worse. So that's one of the reasons why we should do all that we can to ask, why do we get angry? Do we have tripwires that need to be deconstructed? Because we can. We can gain better self-control or logical reasoning at a time of stress so we don't become a victim of that stress, especially younger people. So even what we considered mild stress is having a problem in younger people, male and female staff members, who in this one study found that their performance, their judgment, was negatively impacted. So we need not just to take some deep breaths or spend more time in nature or focus in mindful meditation the present moment instead of worrying about the future or regrets about the past or connecting with others, if only over Zoom, which, by the way, China owns Zoom and they've been spying on us through Zoom, new report just came out, or even on FaceTime. Exercises in any form, especially mindfulness practices like martial arts, tai chi, yoga, is good. Even spending time with a pet is all good at reducing stress and especially improving children's attention and learning. However, that does not eliminate the problem. We need a whole new mind think. Dr. Grayson, one of the world's greatest humanistic psychologists, and I had a discussion on this. I filmed him discussing this. And it's for a documentary that is still in progress, but I'm going to get that segment of the interview, and I'm going to put it up so you can watch it and hear it, just to show you how it's important that we get to the underlying issue. Otherwise, what will happen is you'll say, oh, I shouldn't have lost my temper. I'm sorry I said that. How many I'm sorrys can you do before you undermine the foundation of trust in the emotional stability of a relationship? How many times can you deal in anger and wrongful judgments when it comes to jealousy, envy, until finally someone says, enough, I've had enough, can't take anymore? Long before someone exits a relationship, they've already are looking for the door. It's finding the time and circumstances and courage to say goodbye, knowing that more often than not, in a volatile relationship, all you're going to get is a lot of hate, anger, and negative attitude coming back at you. But what causes that to begin with? I'll be doing a series of programs on this, full hours. I'm going to do 2 one-hour programs for the Progressive Commentary Hour on this very topic, so that we don't have to look for a way for relieving the stress, but rather eliminating the stress. And from Coventry University and the Glasgow University, we have a study about walking. Walking can relieve leg pain in people with peripheral artery disease. So we know it's really good for us. It's good for our hearts and our lungs, walking, jogging, power walking. But the latest news is that it helps people with peripheral artery disease. So that can improve your quality. It can reduce leg pain, cramps, fatigue that some people experience. And by the way, peripheral artery disease is very common. It's a type of cardiovascular disease which affects about 236 million people around the world. It happens when the arteries in the legs and feet become clogged with fatty plaques through a process known as atherosclerosis. And while some people with this disease experience no symptoms, the most classic symptoms are pain, cramps, numbness, weakness, or tingling that occurs in the legs during walking. I've also mentioned this many times. It's also known as intermittent claudication. It affects about 30% of people with peripheral artery disease, and the intermittent claudication is more common in adults. So now we have a way of helping to relieve this. Proper physical fitness makes a big difference. But you got to walk for about a half hour. And if you run or jog, according to University of Arizona, you are creating more connectivity in your brain. That's correct. Exercise benefits we know about, but they benefit not just the muscle, the brain. Hundreds of studies have shown how almost any kind of exercise improves memory and other mental skills, also known as cognitive function. But MRI scans now reveal that endurance runners' brains have greater functional connectivity than the brains of more sedentary individuals. So, one more reason to do your training. I'm Gary Null. We are 19 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to play a short video, and mind you, this is disturbing. I'd like you to call in later in the show and give us your feelings about this, because it's something we don't want to see. What can we do to prevent this? And the COVID package they passed, or just passed yesterday, is a joke. It gives billions, hundreds of billions of dollars to the companies or countries that thousands of lobbyists got in as sweetheart deals, and this very little goes to the American public. Very little actually helps change the problems we have seen in this country in the last 10 months. So that needs to be completely reformed. Otherwise, we're just, it's a massive pig trough. But who should be helped? Small businesses to a greater extent, and they're not helping the way they should. I'll give you my ideas later about how people who are unemployed can be helped to get back up on their feet. Just giving someone a $600 check or even upping it more, how long is that going to last when they have thousands of dollars in expenses and you haven't stopped the predatory debt companies from buying up people's debt and then harassing them, getting liens against them and anything they own? How does that help a person? Here, we're giving you $600. Oh, and by the way, we realize you have $15,000 in credit card bills, and we realize you're paying 50% interest on those, and it's compounded, and we realize that you have no credit, and you have no cash, and once you spend that money, you're gone. But we're going to allow all these industries that have supported Joe Biden. By the way, he was the number one person in Congress that supported protecting the payday lenders and the banks, credit card company, from any kind of reform. But we're not going to touch that industry. We don't want them to lose any money. So why isn't this in Congress? Because many of the members of Congress on both sides have been captured by these industries. Where they put the money is where it benefits them. So this whole thing has to be redone and stop all the money going to foreign countries. All of it. Insane when you read. I read last night. I was just appalled. And then you give a 5,000-page document with 3 to 4 hours for every member of Congress to read it. It's just like Obama's Obamacare, when Nancy Pelosi said, you'll know what's in it once we vote it as a law. You mean you haven't read it? Nobody had read it. That was only like 1,300 or 1,600 pages. This is just the way it's done now. It's just a free-for-all of self-interest. And by the way, before we take our break, in New York City, on January 13th, put this on your calendar, please. There's going to be a demonstration against forced COVID-19 at Pfizer's global headquarters. Advocates from around the United States will be demonstrating to assure that COVID-19 vaccines will never become mandatory. At the global headquarters of Pfizer, which is 235 East 42nd Street in Manhattan, Wednesday, January 13th, beginning at 11 a.m., and that's two blocks east of Grand Central Terminal. And by the way, Pfizer is the world's largest drug company and the manufacturer of the first COVID vaccine released in the United States. Pfizer, along with Merck, Glaxo, Santa Fe, control more than 80% of the global vaccine market in their superpowers. This is being sponsored by the Autism Action Network, the Children's Health Defense, My Kids, My Choice, New York Alliance for Vaccine Rights. We certainly support this. Back in a moment with this troubling video. Please stay with us.
As we realize that it's not quite as dangerous as we thought it'd be, you know, I was absolutely appalled at the cowardice, you know, and as you're sitting there with your masks on, I don't blame you for wearing masks because I'd be hiding my face too if I was you for what you're doing. This is absolutely horrendous what you're doing to these people. I'm a business owner, and I'm telling you, our families are starving. You know, you guys can sit here with your jobs. You can sit here and you're going to get paid. You can fall asleep in your chair like that gentleman's doing behind his mask right there. Okay? And I'm telling you right now that right now we're being peaceful. And you better be happy that we're good citizens, that we're peaceful citizens. But it's not going to be peaceful much longer. Okay? And this isn't a threat. I'm not a criminal. I've never been a criminal. But I'm telling you, good citizens are going to turn into real concerned and revolutionary citizens real soon. And nobody else is going to say that. I'm probably the only person that has a ball to say what I'm saying right now. That we're building, we're organizing, and we'll work with law enforcement or without law enforcement. But you won't stop us when time comes because our families are starving. And if you don't hear the seriousness of my voice, I hope you open your ears and you absolutely listen to what I'm saying. Because this is a warning for what's coming. It's not going to be peaceful much longer. It's not going to be rah-rah. It's not going to be speeches. It's not going to be gathering outside saying a Pledge of Allegiance. It's not going to be waving flags. It's going to be real. When you've seen the things that I've seen, I went to war for this country. I've seen the ugliest, dirtiest part of humanity. I've been in combat, and I never want to go back again. But I'm telling you what, I will to save this country. If it has to be against our own citizens, it will happen. And there's a million people like me, and you won't stop us. Open the county. Let our citizens do what they need to do. Let owners of businesses do what they need to do to feed their families. Take the masks off. Quit masking and muzzling your children. The psychological damage that you're doing to them is horrible. I've had 6 friends kill themselves since it's happened. Veterans who lost their jobs. How do you feel about being complicit in perpetuating that? The greatest hoax ever perpetuated on the American people, and you're a part of it by wearing your masks. In Shasta County, we're supposed to be red country up here. Not blue country, we're red country up here. You guys know that. You claim to be conservatives, maybe you're not, maybe you're liberals, I don't know. But by God, we're Americans, and remember that. Take your masks off, quit muzzling yourselves. Join us, fight with us against what's going on in Sacramento. It's a travesty. Thanks.
Okay. That's one man's opinion, but if you don't think he speaks for 100 million Americans, you are out of touch. We do not want to see that kind of potential violence in America. No responsible, reasonable person does. And yet we've seen a lot of violence. We've seen violence against small businesses, people of color whose businesses have been drowned. They've been killed, beaten. And yet, where is the outrage? Where's the outrage when people cannot feed their families? What would you do if you could not feed your family? Yet you see every politician in America, every public servant in America, from the police to the sheriffs, they're all getting salaries. Their families are not starving. What would you do? At what point would you break? At what point would you say, enough? Think about that. Because just like I warned you about the 12 tipping points 11 years ago, and I said if we don't address these now by making major lifestyle changes, going vegan, buying local, buying organic, these are going to tip. Well, they've tipped. Now, hundreds of thousands of American farmers are losing their farms. Where's the demonstrations? Where's the bailout? Where's the help for those farmers who couldn't farm and had mortgages, high interest rates on credit cards, and they shot themselves, killed themselves, or they sold the farm or lost the farm to bankruptcy? There was such a sad picture. True, about 200 people standing at an auction, and they were there not to bid because the guy's farm had been repossessed. And so since none of them bid, the guy was able to save his farm. Someone bid some small amount. And there's solidarity among farmers. They care about one another. There's solidarity in small towns. There's solidarity in those who are neither right nor left politically. They just consider themselves good citizens. At what point does the corruption, the hubris, the greed become so untenable that people finally lose it? Remember what I've been saying this whole time. You'll see nothing change in America till people are in too much pain. And thus far, we haven't been. We've had all kinds of problems, but now we're in that zone. We're entering the pain zone, the zone that doesn't stop the pain. Your thoughts? I'd like to hear from you. 888-874-4888. Remember, no one on Wall Street, no one in Washington, no one in the media, none of the celebrities. We have a whole culture of entitlement. The professional class, they're not a part of the demonstration for changing the inequalities, the income inequalities, the biases, the entire evisceration of our system. So there's going to be a tipping, just like the other environmental tipping points. We're about to hear from people with a human tipping point, and it will be massive, unlike anything we've ever experienced in world history. Oh, by the way, India had a demonstration and a massive tipping. 250 million farmers went on strike because of draconian laws. And they won. But we don't have that yet. Now, an article. Because I'm going to try to put in proper perspective without any inflection of my own concerns just what the peer-reviewed journal science supports. Some of the things are wrong with how we're handling this pandemic. Yes, we do have a real virus, and yes, it has been deadly. And that's the only thing that I've heard anyone say that's accurate. That's why we have entitled this article A More Honest Perspective of the COVID-19 Pandemic. Since the first cases of the new coronavirus strain outside of China, every aspect of the pandemic's ever-changing amoebic narrative has been carefully orchestrated and controlled by the World Health Organization and major governmental health agencies. High officials within a syndicate of institutions, including the CDC, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, and the UK's National Health Services, have largely dictated government responses to lessen the pandemic. The SARS-2 COVID-19 pandemic is not the first time unelected medical bureaucrats, who the average person assumes to possess an enduring expertise, have guided global policies against pandemics and serious infectious outbreaks. The most recent example was the 2009-10 H1N1 swine flu pandemic that never truly happened according to plan. Subsequently, that effort revealed a surprising incompetence in the international medical hierarchy that can be blamed on the entire system rather than a few inept individuals. However, during the current pandemic scare, something unusual and remarkably radical has happened. Historically, voices of opposition within institutional medicine remain relatively silent. Most often, it is only a handful of health professionals who come forward to challenge official statements or to uncover serious flaws in the scientific literature to support their actions. Yet for the past year, we have witnessed tens of thousands of physicians, medical experts, and research scientists coming forward publicly with harsh and even damning criticisms of how the ruling medical agencies have mishandled the pandemic. They easily recognize these agencies' contradictions, the conflicts of interest with the pharmaceutical industry, the large body of medical literature deconstructing and discrediting their fundamental claims, and the evidence to prove their policies are scientifically baseless. These are not dissident mavericks. Over 52,000 medical professionals representing some of the world's leading medical schools and research institutions have already signed the Great Barrington Declaration in protest against the official COVID-19 strategies and these policies' serious adverse effects on the physical and mental health of children, working class citizens, and the poor. Moreover, they have nothing to gain, no financial interest to jeopardize their judgments, and they are fully aware of the pushback and blacklisting, the defunding, and the character assassination that is inevitable and will end up injuring their reputations. Around the world, dissident medical voices are warning us that, one, the official death counts, particularly in the United States and the United Kingdom, are grossly exaggerated. They're not accurate by any scientific measure. Two, polymerase chain reaction, the PCR test, was never created to be used as a diagnostic tool to determine COVID-19 infection or any other virus. Over-reliance upon PCR is a travesty that has created a case pandemic rather than an actual symptomatic scourge. Three, the evidence to support the belief that large social lockdowns and social distancing, perhaps even mask wearing, will deter the spread of the virus is overstated and inaccurate. Remember, the world closed down, and with masks and social isolation, and yet here it is again. And now we're told it's going to happen again. So then if the masks work and if social distance works, then why are we then not seeing a decrease? Number four, America's official narrative, where the number of cases per capita far surpass any other nation, that effective, safe, and cheaper drugs such as ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine have no value and pose serious harm is completely unfounded. Rather, if used wisely, is highly effective and safe as a preventative measure for first-stage treatment of mild and moderate infections. A compilation of 210 scientific studies on hydroxychloroquine's effectiveness against COVID-19, 145 peer-reviewed, only found 26 showing that the cheap, widely used drug posed some risk or was ineffective. The remainder clearly indicates that hydroxychloroquine is one of our best and most reliable courses of treatment. For example, a study of 585 patients treated with hydroxychloroquine along with azithromycin and zinc were relieved in under 3 days, and none, not a single one, was hospitalized. None required ventilation, none died. Another study published in the Journal of Clinical and Translational Science reported 73% reduction in hospitalizations with no serious adverse events. 5. In the meantime, the world has awaited a vaccine or a new miracle drug, and no medical intervention is warranted other than personal hygienic practices, masks, and social distancing. That is simply wrong. The New York Times and other major media outlets are misrepresenting new cases of COVID-19 with actual disease, thereby grossly inflating those who may be positive but are otherwise healthy and pose no public threat. The World Health Organization, the CDC, and the National Health Service's internal confusion and culture of inconsistency is leaving more and more citizens questioning who can be trusted. Even the otherwise conservative British Medical Journal published a rare and brutal condemnation of the corruption and commercialization throughout the official COVID-19 narrative. I'm going to quote from the British Medical Journal's executive editor, the top person, Dr. Kamran Abbasi, quote, "Science is being suppressed for political and financial gain. COVID-19 has unleashed a state corruption on a grand scale, and it is harmful to public health. Politicians and industry are responsible for this opportunistic embezzlement. So too are scientists and health experts. The pandemic has revealed how the medical-political complex can be manipulated in an emergency, a time when it is even more important to safeguard science." End quote. We have never read anything in any medical journal, not even in the New England Journal of Medicine under the tutelage of Dr. Angell, when she was highly critical of the pay-for-play scientists and physicians getting large amounts of money from big pharma and then writing positive articles about a drug. No, this is just a tiny sample. The whole article in the British Medical Journal is this strong. Sadly, mainstream media such as the New York Times, Washington Post, BBC are revealing a lack, in our opinion, of journalistic integrity, despite the open accessibility of medical studies to the contrary. Instead, the media serves as an echo chamber to continue advancing this international debacle created by our leading health officials. To understand the miscalculation of deaths that can be directly attributed to COVID-19, we can begin with the CDC's own website. Quote from the CDC, "Due to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, this system will suspend data collection for the 2020 and 2021 influenza season," end quote. In other words, the CDC's monthly mortality or death reports will no longer be monitoring actual influenza deaths, which are more often than not also conflated with deaths due to pneumonia. William Briggs, a former professor at Cornell University, noted that last summer the CDC ceased counting flu and pneumonia deaths, quote, "because we suppose of the difficulty telling these deaths from doom deaths." That means COVID-19, end quote. So how will these deaths be entered into mortality reports, meaning influenza, the annual flu, where tens of thousands of Americans die? In early December, an assistant director at Johns Hopkins Medical School's Department of Applied Economics examined death statistics during the COVID pandemic in previous years. Due to the high percentage of non-COVID deaths decreasing without explanation during the pandemic. Her conclusion was that these deaths were intentionally being labeled as COVID-1 caused. Her colleague, Dr. Yanni Gu, summarized the problem, quote, "The CDC classified all deaths that are related to COVID-19 simply as COVID-19 deaths, even patients dying from other underlying diseases but are infected with COVID-19 count as COVID-19 deaths. This is likely the main explanation as to why COVID-19 deaths drastically increased while deaths by all other diseases experience a significant decrease," end quote. They were attacked, and the article was rescinded. We called them and asked, "Are you willing to stand by your claims and have the documentation to support it? Or are you understanding that you have made an error and therefore the legitimacy of the retraction should stand?" And they were unequivocal. "We told the truth. Our research stands." Why didn't any media invite these people onto their programs to interview them? We have. This irrational discrepancy in causes of death is not solely an American problem. Globally, there has been a 98% decrease in diagnosed flu cases compared to 2019. Australia alone has recorded a 96% drop-off. There may be a sensible way to explain the decrease in flu, and this in turn helps to explain the dramatic increase in COVID-19 cases due to inaccurate testing and an infestation of false positives. Given the enormous impact of lockdowns, closing businesses and public spaces, social distancing and masks, it is feasible, slightly so, that flu rates would decline, but decline 98%? However, then the rise in COVID-19 cases becomes completely nonsensical unless spurious testing is the culprit. So ask yourself this. We have examined in detail from the CDC's own website, the last 5 years' total deaths, and especially deaths from flu. Why is it that there are now multiple articles showing that in the last 5 years, total deaths have remained rather constant, but now flu deaths have dropped off the chart? Is it possible they're simply re-tabulating all people who die of flu as dying from COVID? So that is what we're dealing with. Recently, even the World Health Organization had to acknowledge the PCR's failures. That's the test that everyone's getting. Despite the mincing of words, here's what the World Health Organization just last week had to say. Quote, "The design principle of PCR means that for patients with high levels of circulating virus, that's your viral load, relatively few cycles will be needed to detect virus, so the CT, what is called the cycle threshold, will be low. Conversely, when specimens return with a high cycle threshold value, it means that many cycles were required to detect the virus. In some circumstances, the distinction between background noise and actual presence of the target virus is difficult to ascertain," end quote. You heard on this program Anthony Fauci stating that above a certain threshold, meaning a certain cycle where they keep recycle and blowing up and enlarging and enlarging and enlarging with a PCR, once you get above a certain level, you have nothing there. You have a dead virus. You're not infected. You're not going to infect anyone. And yet those are all considered positive tests. Most testing labs are using a cycle threshold of 40 amplifications. Consequently, the high rate of false positives. This is the reason for cases rising exponentially while actual deaths had leveled in midsummer until more recently. In the United Kingdom, Public Health England states, quote, "If a person has both a negative and positive test, then only their positive tests will be counted," end quote. The United States says likewise, well, that's not science. That's not medicine. I mean, that's insane. Are you saying that if you test positive and negative, it's always positive? Science would beg to differ. University of California virologist Dr. Juliet Morrison states, quote, "I'm shocked that people think that 40 cycles could represent a positive," end quote. She recommends a reasonable cutoff of 35. Dr. Michael Mina at Harvard School of Public Health suggests 30 cycles or less. University of North Carolina's Director of Clinical Microbiology, Melissa Miller, has called the application of PCR for all situations, quote, "completely irresponsible," end quote. But do you see any of these individuals on mainstream media being interviewed, being challenged, that the PCR test is functionally worthless as a diagnostic tool? The most damning indictment against every governor across the United States who continues to rule on lockdowns and school closures and draconian police enforcement has yet failed to rein in the plague of erroneous PCR testing in his or her state, and is found in a recent study by the Infectious Disease Society of America. Using as low as 25 cycle threshold, 70% of positives were not actual cases because the virus was unable to be cultured. In other words, the virus in 70% of cases was already dead. And yet, the New York Times would say these are new cases. And also, when PCR cycle thresholds are adjusted, the number of cases plummet. This was observed in efforts made in Massachusetts, New York, and Nevada, where it was discovered that 90% of those testing positive carry, quote, "barely any virus," end quote. Fortunately, some countries are waking up to PCR's unreliability that was originally perpetrated by a very entrepreneurial German doctor, Christian Dosten. Dosten also happens to be an advisor to the German Federal Ministry of Health. Very influential position to promote anything you want. A Portugal appeals court ruled PCR is unreliable for testing COVID-19, and any enforced quarantine based upon a positive PCR test would be illegal. As for Dosten and his paper published in the journal Eurosurveillance, it has served as the rationale for the entirety of Europe to use his PCR test. But the paper is substantially fraudulent, but helps serve as a means for Dosten to gain a patent for coronavirus PCR testing. Now, 22 leading medical professionals from the International Consortium of Scientists and Life Sciences have filed for the paper's retraction due to, quote, "a tremendous number of very serious design flaws, which make the PCR test completely unsuitable as a diagnostic tool to identify the SARS-CoV-2 virus," end quote. In conclusion, the real crime is that none of the above that I just shared with you, failures, were inevitable. There is no reasonable explanation for miscalculating actual deaths associated with COVID-19 other than sheer stupidity or gross intentional neglect. PCR's unsuitability is to accurately diagnose the presence of an active COVID-19 or any other infectious virus has been well documented for many years. It doesn't do it. It is unsuitable. Even PCR's inventor, Dr. Kerry Mullis, has stated it is unsuited for clinical diagnosis. Yet despite all the foreknowledge of these facts, countless people have had their lives devastated by the choices our federal and state officials, politicians, have made based upon severely flawed official science. Unnecessary quarantining, loss of income and lockdowns, mental stress, and also not promoting the use early on of inexpensive, safe, and clinically proven medications that would have helped. Waiting for the vaccine, waiting for the miracle drug, was their advice. Again, we might turn Abbasi's article to a closer read in the British Medical Journal. Quote, "As the powerful become more successful, richer, and further intoxicated with power, the inconvenient truths of science are suppressed. When good science is suppressed, people die." I'm Gary Nall. The article is there for you. And we have Jeremiah from Harlem on the phone. Hi, Jeremiah, your turn.
How are you, Gary?
Can you hear me? Thank you. I can hear you fine.
Okay, great. I just want to say, first of all, thank you for your coverage during this whole period. And, you know, I think people really need to wake up and put their thinking caps on from what you're describing about the problem with these PCR tests as it pertains to CTE, the vaccine agenda. I mean, basically, this is like the NBA playoffs or the NFL playoffs. They've been pumping us up with fear, and they're not going to back down now. And we have a lot of people who used to be activists or who generally are activists who, for some reason, I don't know what kind of spell they cast over the society, but people who are scared to talk about these critical matters. And they better start thinking about it, and they better start talking about it, because we're going to have to make some decisions soon. And, you know, it's just unbelievable the level of ignorance that's going on right now in terms of, you know, if you question any of these things, you're being just lumped into this category of ridiculousness. It's like they basically make it seem as though you have MAGA hat wearing freaks on the one hand, and you have these enlightened liberals on the other hand. But when I talk to people who are defending all the policies now, they're very privileged people. They're property owners. They're people who have contractual protections, and they're not feeling the heat. And, you know, I'm just really afraid that by the time people realize what's going on, it's going to be too late. And, you know, we say that over and over again as it applies to a lot of situations, but it's real this time.
It's been real all along. It's just that this has galvanized the opportunity to exploit the crisis. And they've exploited it by controlling the narrative. They could not control the narrative if Chris Hedges, if Cornel West, if Black Agenda Report, and their outstanding reporting, but you don't hear these people, and now they've excluded and now are attacking the Intercept's Glenn Greenwald and all the best journalists, Matt Taibbi,
Gary, can
have
I ask
been
you a
condemned.
Question?
And these are the people who would tell us the truth in their publications historically, would appear nightly. Every night you see him on Keith Olbermann, you'd see Matt Taibbi, then you see Chris Hedges. You don't see Abby Martin. You don't see any Glenn Ford. You don't see any of these individuals because they refuse to tell lies to support an ideological, political, or financial agenda. These are ethical people, and they do not have. They've been deplatformed by Facebook. So you are right, Jeremiah. We are coming to the tipping point where if we do not act, the laws will be written so we can't. Do you know, just today, one of our listeners who sends me regular material, his name is J.P. Morin, he sent me the laws out of France that have gone to their parliamentary body there. And if you don't have your vaccine when you show up, you cannot take any transportation. Now, you can't get on a plane. You can't get on a train. Well, what do you think that would do to people who are not financially capable of getting from point A to point B in a country unless they've been vaccinated, but for whatever reason? Maybe they have an autoimmune condition and shouldn't be vaccinated. Maybe they have underlying health conditions that would prevent that, even if they were pro-vaccine. You're going to prevent those people by legal decree? That is a way of saying we're not making vaccines mandatory, but we're going to make it impossible for you to go to a ball game, go to a public event, fly, ride on a subway. That's what's happening.
Gary.
Yes.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure, please do. And by the way, to our WBAI, 1 second, Jeremiah, to our WBAI audience, we have to say goodbye because we're going to provide you with the news that now, but we're continuing on PRN.fm. Please continue. I'll be happy to address your question, Jeremiah.
Thank you. Now, I have an analogy for you, Gary, and I just want to ask you, you know, I'm a layman. I'm by no means a medical professional. I've been following this whole thing very closely, politically and medically, from a layman's point of view. Now, basically, we have these seasonal illnesses that have been with us for as long as humanity has existed, right? We have influenza viruses and we have coronaviruses. Now, doesn't it seem, is this a correct analogy that all of a sudden in 2019, 2020, COVID-19, is this sort of the equivalent of the cold virus, which is like let's say, a little chihuahua or a medium-sized dog at the dog park, and they come back the next day and the coronavirus is a big old Rottweiler, bigger than the flu. And doesn't that indicate gains? Like, for one, is that a decent analogy? And two, is that based? There's such an indication to me that there's gain of function experimentation that has led to this, and how that's something we would ignore is just beyond me. It's sort of like saying that if you walk into a room and you see a dead body, it's irrelevant whether that person was killed by another person or not, whether or not that person was murdered. Well, of course it's relevant. If this is a man-made virus, that is relevant. And unfortunately, there's evidence indicating it is. But is my analogy a decent one to say, let's say you see a friend and he's 5'8", and then you see a friend the next week and he's 6'6". Is that what happened with this COVID-19, that all of a sudden the cold is a new cold? The dog is a bigger dog. Your friend is a taller friend.
Let me, you're very accurate in that description, but let me give it some underlying scientific support. We have now determined with documentation that there was gain-of-function research going on in North Carolina University, that when there was a concern about the safety of this work, both in the United States and at the Wuhan Institute, it was banned. No more were you allowed to do. So Anthony Fauci gave, I believe it was around $6.1 million to the Wuhan researchers and got scientists from different laboratories in the United States, including North Carolina, to go there so they could continue doing this gain of research work. And already there was a report through our State Department a year before that inspections of that particular lab were extremely poor, meaning the outcome. There was all kinds of breaches they could find that did not qualify them to do this kind of research because it would be so easy for something to escape. Now, so we know that this is a virus very, very similar to the cold virus. It comes from the same line. We know that there's such similarity, but it is also, like all viruses, can mutate and shift all the time. We also know that the one thing that will protect you, no matter what virus you're faced with, is the state of your immune system. So once we found that this was done by a collaboration, a Canadian research company, a Chicago research company, the University of North Carolina, and the Chinese, that's when we should have said, if it's illegal in the United States by ethics, why isn't it illegal everywhere else in the world? That's like we banning DDT because it causes cancer and gene mutations here, and then we turn right around and allow that same company to sell it to countries all over the world without any warning. And that's exactly what was done, as if we don't care what happens as long as we don't adversely affect the vulture capitalists who are exploiting this. And that is something that we should have stopped. And we should have held Anthony Fauci accountable. He was not questioned on his complicity in this, because without his complicity and funding, we wouldn't have this today. Now, how it got from the laboratory out into the public, we do not know. It would just be a specious speculation to suggest, and I'm not going to do that. I like to deal with facts. But at the time when they saw that they could understand that all viruses circulate, and they hit a population. Well, imagine that they just closed down New York City schools. Something in the neighborhood of 44 children were found to be positive for COVID, and I think 144 teachers in the system. But how many of those were sick? Oh, they didn't tell us that. Well, then if you test positive, it just means that you're positive. You're young. You could be asymptomatic. Were there any symptoms? Well, that's not important. They didn't check. It's the symptoms that you should be looking at: loss of taste, dizziness, non-productive dry cough, or it can have brown mucus, achiness, weakness, fatigue, and upper respiratory tract congestion. These are some of the symptoms of COVID, but they're also some of the same symptoms for flu. Now, I do not know whether this can be equal to the flu or more deadly than the flu, but I know that in the general population every year, Jeremiah, when students come down with a cold, you'll see different students or teachers out with a cold or the flu. Do they close down the schools? Do you know of how many schools have been closed because some students and teachers got the flu or cold? How about none? But what if you tested every single student and teacher who had a cold, or anyone had a cold, and they all came back with a coronavirus, or not a coronavirus, a COVID virus, but they had no symptoms? We always have people who are exposed to different microorganisms, and depending upon the strength of our immune system and the presence of that virus in us, we will either get some symptoms or sick, some will die or not. There's been a political reaction, not a scientific public health reaction to what we're seeing. And now, if you heard me, 52,000 scientists, Harvard, Oxford, Stanford University professors, everybody is joining in, showing what's wrong with the existing narrative. That has never happened before in American history. That is a challenge. The ultra-Orthodox, highly respected conventional scientists and doctors challenging the ultra-Orthodox, highly respected conventional scientific bureaucrats. And we have to become aware and educated. I'm glad that you're out there, Jeremiah, spreading the word. All the information I share each day, I post the articles, so please share them with everyone you can. Have a nice day, everyone.